Welcome to Recovery Stories Yukon. The purpose of this podcast is to break stigmas, bring hope, and show that recovery is possible within our communities. Today on the show, we have Katie. Katie is 39 years old, lives in Dawson City, and has been sober since September 25th, 2017. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you.
Please start your story anywhere you'd like.
When I was 14 was the first time I got actually drunk. At a party, $5 bottle of Boone's Sangria. And every day after that, it just seemed like that was my goal, was to get $5 to get a bottle of Boone's. And it just, you know, the ball started rolling. You try weed after that, and then shrooms, then acid, then E, then blows. C2B, meth, K, PCP, it all just, it rolled really, really quick. And a lot of bad decisions. At 15, there was some pretty big changes to my circle of friends. A lot of older men, a lot of fast money that, you know, a 15-year-old shouldn't have, because what else do you spend it on? Drugs. It was just, you know, drugs, and you want someone to party with, so you spend the money on them too, so they can party. When you're 15, you know, you don't got ID. The drinking wasn't so much, because it was more of an effort to get the alcohol than it was the drugs. Because a drug dealer doesn't care that you're 15, but the liquor store does. So there was drinking involved, for sure, but not as much as when I turned 19. I remember, you know, my boyfriend when I was 17 said, you know, we should stop doing so much drugs. He was older than me, of course, and I remember my reaction was, I'm only 17, I just started doing them. I'm like, this is a good time, you know, my hangovers weren't so bad, like, being sketched out from drugs didn't seem to deplete my system and make me feel so self-loathing, like, it felt pretty put together in, like, just this good time. A whole bunch of metal shows, and for some reason cocaine was the hot topic there in that scene, so I ended up going away from E to coke a bit more at that time. I started hitting the bars pretty hard, nightly, almost. So at 21, things started getting pretty wild. Me and my boyfriend at the time were doing so much drugs, it was becoming a problem. The anxiety, the, you know, I'm not going anywhere in my life, I just go to work and go to the bar, there's no reward to any of this. I had proposed that we sobered up. He wasn't really into that. So I broke up with him, and I thought I was confident with breaking up with him, and then it seemed to consume me. I did not handle that breakup well. I started, my whole point of the breakup was to, hopefully that would be like a push to get away from him and get more sober, but really it just sent me into this self-loathing thing where my drinking got way out of control, and that's the first time I had DTs. I mean, even going like half a day without alcohol, and I'm hearing stuff in my head, I'm seeing things. What is this? You know, my aunt has schizophrenia, so I took myself to the MH thinking I had turned schizophrenic. And they asked me about my drinking, and when I told them, they're like, oh, that's just DTs, you just gotta go down to the emergency room. Like, that's not a mental health problem. So yeah, they weren't really into the mental health problem behind the drinking. They detoxed me, told me it was just that. But, you know, after you detox, if there's no plan, like, you just go back to doing what you're doing. I ended up clinging to someone that I thought, oh, he doesn't drink, this is good. It wasn't a very loving relationship. There was some emotional abuse and control and slight physical abuse. So I started to secretly drink when I was 21, and that was a whole different type of drinking, like hiding your bottle in the bottom of a sweater chest. And as soon as he's asleep, I'm drinking as much out of this bottle as I can. And it's basically a 26er of whiskey or rye every night, which sends your brain into a whole thing of DTs, and you're trying to keep it together so he doesn't see and he doesn't start yelling at you and maybe hit you or anything. And so, eventually, probably one of the only good things that alcohol might have done for me at the time was I had got so drunk that I broke up with him. That I didn't care what the repercussions were of that breakup. I just knew, I don't even care if you kill me. Like, I just don't want to do this anymore. And so I was drunk enough that I did that. And thankfully, you know, nothing happened. I just left the house. And so when I met someone when I was 24, he seemed relatively normal. We were both partying a bit, but we took a really long trip together and had a really long talk about, you know, where things go in a relationship when you party like this. And it just, we agreed, you know, they just don't turn out. So we really chilled out. I really chilled out from 24 to, I'd say, sorry, 25 by the time I got it together with him. 25 to 30. There was still light drug use, more drinking on my side than his. There was only a couple times that I really cheesed him off with being super drunk. But when that relationship ended, that was like the last straw I had in me. It just completely took down any security blanket of life that I had. I was like, oh my God, I'm back to square one. Part of his reason for leaving me did have to do with my past, which makes you feel just terrible. Like, there's no other way to put it. I had always thought about coming up to the Yukon. All of this before 30 was down in Ontario. I had a friend up here in Dawson. I always wanted to come. He wasn't into it. And so it was just kind of like, well, whatever, I guess we're not going. Like, it wasn't a big deal. But once I realized that I had to do something and get away from this, I really didn't want my family or my friends to see how unglued I was about to become. I thought it would be easier to do that 6,000 kilometers away. I just went really hard here. Luckily, I'm still employable. I wasn't so much of a wreck that I couldn't get a job or anything. I did have to go back to Ontario to get my ducks in a row because I just left a whole house full of stuff. And in the winter, I went back not necessarily to my hometown. I didn't want to be in the hometown, but close enough that I could deal with my dealings and find a whole bunch of new stuff to get into and trouble. More bad decisions. And then I thought, you know, you just got to get back up to the Yukon and start fresh. That's my whole plan. If I can just get up there. Nintendo Switch had just come out. I thought, oh, I'll just stay in my room. I'll play these video games. Like, the ideas that you have in your head to try and get sober are so crazy sometimes. Like, your ideas won't work. They just won't. And I started to fall apart really quick in 2017 in the summer. I started seeing someone who basically did the same thing as my last ex that I was with for 6 years there, left me for a server at his job, and that sent me on a pretty big spiral. There was cops involved, and I had to get shipped down to Whitehorse. There's suicide attempts, for sure, but I don't know how serious I was. I don't know if sometimes you just think you're in so much pain, you just want everyone to see it. Like, if I just keep doing this, you can just see how much pain I'm in and understand what I'm going through. It's destructive. It's embarrassing. It doesn't make you feel good, for sure. Looking back on it, there's a lot of humility that I have to remind myself, and that helps me stay sober. I took counseling when I was 21. They had suggested counseling, so eventually I got that. But what I didn't know was about counselor shopping. The guy was not a right fit for me, so I brushed that off pretty quick. And then here, I realized I should, because of my sexual conduct, I should go on birth control again was a good idea. And I had an appointment for it, and one of my friends here said, you know, you should really mention to that doctor that you've been doing cocaine every day and drinking every day for almost 2 years now. So I was like, we'll see, but of course my appointment was there, and I was just passed out in my room. And luckily she remembered, and she woke me up. She said, you gotta go to that appointment. I'm like, it's just birth control, like, who cares, you know? She said, you should really go. And so she dragged me in, I remember going into this appointment for just a prescription, but I couldn't even show my face. Like, I had my hood covering my face, my head was straight down to the floor. And he's like, what's really going on? And so I tell him, sobbing, can't look at anyone, I can just see their feet. And then he runs upstairs and gets one of the counselors. And then they bring me upstairs and they start assessing me and signed me up for counseling there. She was a much better counselor fit for me here. So she was pretty helpful. She really pushed for going to treatment, which I'd fought tooth and nail before really hard. Because I always seemed to manage to think I could manage it, especially because in those 5 years, I felt like I was. Like, I felt like I could have that control again once more. Like, I just couldn't picture myself never having another drink again, ever. It was such an obscene thought for me. So, eventually, when it started getting pretty bad and the attempt happened and all that, I agreed. But I said I wanted to finish out my work season, which most people around here is October. So we had a date. We had a date for treatment. She said, you know, just don't worry about anything until then, and then just go. So I was like, okay. So I just kind of, I carried on with what I was doing. I couldn't make it. I couldn't make it to the date. I can't even remember what date they originally had for me. Once again, I find myself 6 a.m., I've been up all night, I have to work at 9. I'm sitting there slamming hails, trying to knock myself out so I can get maybe 1 hour of sleep before I go to work. It's not working. I get a ride home to kind of try to clean myself up a bit before I go into work, and I look at myself in the mirror, and I just remember thinking, holy shit, I look like a complete hot mess. My eyes are so red, dilated, lazy eye, like, I look totally messed up. I said, either I'm gonna go into work and get fired. That's one option. Two is, I don't even go to work, and I just keep doing what I'm doing, because I know if I just start doing drugs and alcohol again, this feeling will go away. Or three, I can just go to the hospital and surrender and try to be like, this is it for me. And thankfully, I took that third option. I found a roommate out in the hallway at the staff house, and I asked him to drive me to the hospital. I told the lady at the desk, please, there's drugs in my wallet. I don't even want to open this and look at it. Just get rid of it. And so she did. And they tried to hook me up to stuff to check, but I was so shaky, they couldn't really do any tests on me. But they did let me detox there. I think detoxing in Dawson was a lot more relaxed for me than if I was to go to this. The original plan was to detox at the Sarah Steele building in Whitehorse and then go up to treatment. There's so much alcohol in my system this time, it really didn't even hit me till day three. Like, I had enough alcohol in my system to keep my body going until day three, and then I started getting sick and shaky and hearing things and all that. So it was pretty intense. I made it. I made it sober for, I think, 10 days. Detoxing before I got to treatment. Yeah, so that was September 25th, 2017. I got to treatment, and I remember one of the first things they said to me was, you know, statistically, maybe one of you will remain sober out of these 10 boys and 10 girls separated. I just thought, that's gotta be me, man. It has to be me, that one. Please, for the love of God, has to be me. I can't do this again. I don't think I have it in me. I know every time you relapse, it gets worse. And I'm competitive. I'm a pretty competitive person. I wanted that winning ticket. It would have been the biggest win and is the biggest win of my entire life. Took everything they had to give me and I rolled with it. I used to shun AA. It used to be religious based, it's spiritually based now. So I just gave in. I was like, you know, all these people, they're sober. That's all, the bottom line, that's all I want. If these people are sober, well, then I guess I'm going to AA. It's very helpful. I mean, after I got out of treatment, there's still aftercare. A lot of people need a secondary place to go to. I lucked out in getting sober in this town because it's not my hometown. And my heart really goes out to people that grew up here. I feel like it is probably a little more challenging to get sober around what you're used to. I wasn't used to partying here very much. Two summers, I didn't even hit the winter partying here, so thankfully. So the aftercare is really important. I found, for me personally, writing daily gratitudes was a huge thing. You spend so much time in your addiction focused on all these insanely negative things. And I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that those things don't whop me in the face almost every day. Have some kind of small flashback of some traumatic event that I either witnessed or was a part of. It's how you deal with it. It's what you tell yourself when you think those things. How fast can you brush it off? Or maybe not brush it off is the right word I want, but like deal with it. And just to think of the gratitude of things, you know, your health. Now I have children, my partner. It was a big help. And I did eventually stop going to one-on-one counseling. I felt the counseling was very good for cognitive behavioral therapy, like learning what to do with these thoughts and techniques. And then you get to a point where you've got it down. I mean, after a couple years sober, like, I felt like I was really nailing it. But I remember when I got out of treatment, around Christmas time was hard. There was a couple things around Christmas that really get under my skin. And I was pretty close to relapsing. I remember I even had to run to the bathroom and quickly dump out my mouthwash. Because I was convinced at any moment I was just going to grab the mouthwash and drink it. It's really crazy to think that now. I had to get rid of it. And luckily my partner at the time, he got sober when I got sober and he didn't go to treatment, but he was staying sober on the other line for me, which was incredibly helpful. Unfortunately, at Christmas time is when he has a hard time as well, and he did fall off. We broke up briefly, and then he called me up one day, and I hadn't gone to AA here. I was just sticking with my counseling, and he said, we should go to AA, and I was like, okay. Let's go. I'm not feeling good. You relapsed. You know, let's just go. It was good. It was great. It was really helpful. And then eventually the counseling left and then just the AA stuck. And I felt like with the counseling, getting all those tools and using them and applying them, that was great. And then after, when you're really comfortable in your sobriety, I felt like just sharing with other people and being in a room with other people that get it. Yeah, it's just nice to be surrounded by other sober people. Remind yourself of where you could go in just one quick drink. I try to lead by example. Never really tell anyone to quit drinking. Just show them how nice it is to wake up and feel good. And eventually my partner got sober the following year. I won't say too much about him in case he comes on to tell his own story here one day, but having that partnership with someone else that's sober is so helpful. And then we both got sober, we had our kids. Those are also the most grounding things ever. I couldn't imagine putting my kids through me being like that. The services here are so great if you just take them. It works if you work at it.
Katie, what do you do when you're with your kids and you're having a hard time? What keeps you sober that day when you're struggling?
Faith and knowledge that will make things so much worse. That will make things so much worse. Just adding to your problems. I know you're the first person that introduced me to the term Cali sober. I do still smoke. The only thing I'm going to say that's not total bull about that is that I don't have a smoke and want to die. I don't want to ruin my entire life off of a couple puffs. But everything else really is just bull, you know. I'm not going to sit here and condone it. I think that if you can go without it, that is 100% the better way to go. It's a carcinogen. It's a lot more psychoactive now than it used to be back in the day. There's issues with it, of course. It costs money, it's time consuming, you know, all these little things. Like, but yeah, coffee doesn't make me want to ruin my life. With the kids, if I'm tired and cranky, I have a cup of coffee, no Baileys, no nothing, you know.
Do you find that you get backlash in the AA community for being Kelly sober?
Never. I've never felt that. I'm sure I can think of a couple people that might have a suggestion in their head. They've never expressed that. Yeah, no, I mean, like, AA, I think a lot of people have this idea that you have to go in and you have to do the 12 steps, you have to get a sponsor, you have to believe in something, all these rules. It's not like that at all. I actually never got a sponsor. I have kind of gone through the 12 steps, but for me, AA was just being with people that understood me, and that's all that mattered. All they'll say is just keep coming back.
Do you have any tools other than AA that you lean on, like podcasts or books that you'd like to share?
In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts by Gaber Mate was a huge one for me. It's very enlightening to see how things that happen to you are just, you're piling them on and it's building up and it just gets worse. Like one trauma happens and then you drink and you party, and because you're putting yourself in these vulnerable spots, more trauma happens, and then you drink more and then more trauma happens because you're drunk off of that, and it's this crazy spiral that just builds and builds until it's just too much. Your brain doesn't know what to do with it, and I think that's when people get really suicidal. At the beginning of being sober, journaling was huge. Write down your thoughts. Start with your gratitudes. Maybe write down your traumas, your anxieties, your regrets, and just burn it, let it go.
What's one piece of advice that you would share to somebody listening that is really trying to get sober right now?
Try to find the good people. You'll know who they are. I knew getting sober, my friend circle was going to change. Luckily, I have a lot of old friends that were nothing like me. There's a lot of really close friends I have that, you know, I get out of treatment, they're still sending me snaps of them doing lines or drinking, and I don't care if we've been friends for 20 years, this is about me, and you just have to be selfish and look after you, because you can't look after anyone else, right?
What are you most grateful for in your sobriety, Katie?
My family, my partner, my children. I know being sober for a couple of years, obviously, that feels really good. Very, very good. And, you know, I didn't have any kids, and I always struggled with my purpose in life. I'm not preaching that everyone should have a child, but you need to find that purpose, and that might take you a while. Just having my kids really grounded me for that. It made me feel like I don't question anything now. Everything I do is for them. And the support from my partner.
Thanks so much for being here today, Katie, and sharing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, you can get help by calling the Yukon Government Mental Wellness and Substance Use Services at 1-866-456-3838 or by reaching out to Theki Anate Fly Like an Eagle program at 867-333-2497. If you would like to share your story on this podcast, please email recoverystoriesyukon@gmail.com.